everybody. I'm Dee Dee West, and this is Broken Limelight. And today I have my friend Haley on the podcast with us.
Hi, everybody.
So today we're going to be talking about O.J. Simpson. O.J. Simpson was a famous football player and actor who was charged with murdering his ex-wife, Nicole Brown, and her friend, Ron Goldman. O.J. is probably the most famous person in America to be charged with murder, right? I don't think there's anybody close.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think you've got it spot on.
So, like, even other people like Phil Spector, like, it wasn't like a media sensation. Like, this was like the trial of the century, you know?
Right. I mean, technically he was found not guilty of the murders of Nicole and Ronald, which is pretty crazy.
I know. And that's one thing that I'm going to do a little bit differently in this episode. I tend to stay pretty neutral, like, as if we don't know anything. With this case, I'm going to go ahead and say that OJ's the killer. I mean, we're like anything else, we're going to go into the evidence and we're going to look at the theories. And there are some theories that I entertain, but it's just like, so let me say this. I read his book, If I Did It.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, supposedly the whole book is nonfiction except for the chapter that is about the murder.
I know.
And then we'll talk about this later. He did this interview where they're asking him about it. And he's like, well, hypothetically, here's how I did it. And here's what I remember, hypothetically.
It's insane. Insane.
But anyway, I believe that he did it. But we are going to enter. There are, like I said, there are some other theories that I'll entertain. I feel like it's more likely that he did it. And I'll explain why later. All right. So let's start from the beginning of OJ's story. So OJ Simpson is also known as The Juice. He was born Orenthal James Simpson on July 9th, 1947. He was one of the greatest running backs ever. He played for the Buffalo Bills and was the first person to rush for 2,000 yards. He was super fast. Like, he could run sideways faster than most people can run forwards. In 1985, he was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and he started acting while he was in college, and he appeared in an episode of a drama series called Medical Center while he was negotiating his first contract with the Bills. So he was actually acting before he was playing football. He went on to appear in the Naked Gun films, The Klansman, Roots, Capricorn One, and then he did his own show called Juice that it was just like Ashton Kutcher's punked.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah, that was like after the trial and everything. Like, I feel like that was him trying to stay relevant.
Yeah, for sure.
It was in like 2006, I believe. He was also famously a spokesman for Hertz Rental Car Company. So OJ was born and raised in San Francisco, California, to his mother, Eunice Durden, who was a hospital administrator, and his father was named Jimmy Lee Simpson, who was a chef and a bank custodian. Jimmy Lee left the family when OJ was only 4 years old, but he remained present in his son's life. When OJ was a kid, he discovered that his father was a homosexual when he and his friend went to visit him, and Jimmy Lee opened the door with another man behind him, and both of them were wearing nothing but bathrobes. The friend, his name was Calvin, he was later quoted as saying, "Back in our day, that was the worst thing in the world that you could ever think about, an African-American man being a homosexual." Another source was quoted as saying, "Mama Simpson, as he was known to me, used to hang around the hotel where I lived and was frequently dressed in drag. Everyone knew he was OJ's dad. He got to be known as Mama Simpson because he favored young, butch, white kids as boyfriends."
Interesting.
Later on, OJ would kind of be a little bit of a homophobe. And a lot of people believe this is why, that this was like, again, like they said, in that time, being black and gay, it was really shameful.
Yeah, and it probably really did alter a lot for him, whether it should have or shouldn't have. I'm sure it did.
Right, and this was still what he was born... He was born in 1947, so this was the 50s and 60s. So this was actually really similar to, like, Marvin Gaye's story.
Yes.
OJ's maternal grandparents were from Louisiana, and his aunt gave him the name Orenthal, which she said was the name of a French actor that she liked. He was called OJ from birth, and he didn't even know that his name was Orenthal until a teacher read it in third grade.
That's crazy.
I know. They just called him OJ his whole life, and he never wondered what it was. OJ actually had rickets as a child, and he wore braces on his legs until he was 5, and he ended up being bow-legged because of that, which is really interesting that he's so fucking fast.
That is interesting. I had no idea.
And like I said, OJ studied at USC, that's the University of Southern California, and that's where he played football and started acting. At age 19, he married his first wife. Her name was Marguerite, and they would go on to have three kids together named Arnell, Jason, and a little girl named Erin. Erin actually died at 23 months old.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, we'll get to it. It was really sad, and it was like right in the midst of their divorce.
Oh gosh.
So we're going to talk about Nicole real quick. Nicole Brown was born in Germany on May 19th, 1959. She was the second of four daughters born to Lou and Judith Brown. Her mom was German and her father was an American who was living in Germany. And the family moved back to the family moved to Southern California when Nicole was four. As a child, Nicole was known for being really headstrong. Like, she was the type of person or the type of child who would fall down and get right back up and just like face her challenges head on. Like, there were a couple of childhood injuries that her family like always teased her for. And she just like would like get up and dust herself off and like get right back up. So like one time she crashed her back and went like rear over handlebars, and she literally just like got back up and went, "I'm fine," and like got back on her bike.
Oh, that's great. Those are strong spirited women.
I know. And then another time she fell off a horse and her head started bleeding, and her sister Denise was like freaking out, but ultimately she just like got back on the horse too.
Oh my goodness.
And you know what? Just to like foreshadow a little bit, it kind of says a lot about having an abusive husband. And later on, people would say things about Nicole, like how she pushed his buttons. And it's like maybe she just stood up for herself, you know?
Yeah, she just didn't back down to him every single time.
Nicole's sister, Denise, was 2 years older, and she was actually known as the pretty one, which is like baffling that like Nicole is not the pretty one anywhere she is, you know?
Yeah, I would love to not be the pretty one and be as pretty as Nicole.
I know. Can you imagine just like, I want this family's genetics, you know?
Yeah, we need some of those.
So Denise worked as a model, and sometimes she would invite Nicole to go on work trips with her. So Nicole ended up deciding to try modeling for herself. And when she graduated high school, she went to New York to work as a model.
Introduced O.J. Simpson.
Yeah.
Because she didn't work very long as a model before she met him, I believe.
No, actually what happened was she turned 18 on May 19th, 1977. And the very next day was the day that she graduated high school. So as soon as she graduated high school, she left her parents' home and she moved to LA. And just 5 weeks later, she would meet OJ.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's what I thought. So young.
And so yeah, she was literally on her own as an adult for 5 weeks before this man came into her life.
Mm-hmm.
So 18-year-old Nicole had just moved to L.A., and she got her very first job at a boutique. After 2 weeks at the boutique, the owner offered her a job as a waitress at a club that he owned called the Daisy. A couple weeks into her new job at the Daisy, O.J. Simpson came in. O.J. was actually still married to his first wife, Marguerite Whiteley, who he had been married to for nearly 10 years at this point. According to O.J., their relationship had been rocky for a while, but I mean, wouldn't he say that?
Wouldn't, yeah, if you're married and you found some young, hot 18-year-old. Yeah.
So according to OJ, just before their 10-year anniversary, Marguerite sat him down and told him, "This isn't working, and I'm 5 months pregnant." So OJ was shocked and apparently was like, "Well, I need to take some time to think about this, so I'm going to go."
Oh.
And he told her that he was going to go to the mountains for a couple days to think things through. On his way out of the city, he stopped at a jewelry store and he bought her an anniversary present before deciding to have breakfast at the Daisy, and that's where he spotted Nicole. OJ was just a few weeks shy of his 30th birthday, so he was nearly 30 and Nicole just turned 18. And according to those who were with him that night, OJ took one look at 18-year-old Nicole and said, "I'm going to marry her."
As his wife's at home 5 months pregnant and he didn't know.
He just found out she was pregnant, you know?
Yeah, that's crazy.
Just bought her an anniversary gift, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And for the record, OJ's wife, Marguerite, said that he was never physically abusive with her. But you know what? That's honestly, it's irrelevant because we've heard 911 calls of Nicole while OJ's beating her, you know? So I don't think we even need to establish if he's ever been abusive any other time, you know?
I completely agree. Yeah, there was like, what, 8 911 calls? Some crazy amount.
And I'll play a couple of them in a little bit. Even though Marguerite said that he was never physically abusive, there were some sources that said that she was known to wear sunglasses indoors.
Mm.
I found that difficult to verify, but people did say that. I will say that when asked about why she and OJ split, she said that it was basically his fame. She said that she was a very private person, and yet she couldn't walk down the street without her husband getting swarmed.
Yeah, that makes sense. And honestly, not that it matters if he was abusive to her or not, but it's not that uncommon for men to like target one specific person or woman to be abusive to, you know, there's something that just makes that flip switch. Not that it's the victim's fault in any way.
I think you're right. I think there's different types of abusers, and the type that OJ is, he's possessive.
Yeah.
You're his whole world and he's yours. Like Nicole would say, he's obsessed with me.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, Marguerite would later go on to support OJ in his trial. So when OJ came to the restaurant and he met Nicole, Nicole had actually never heard of him. Because imagine, Nicole is just an 18-year-old. She doesn't know football, you know?
Yeah.
So he was instantly like charming her, and she asked her friend, like, who is he again? And her friend told her, like, you know, he's a Hall of Fame football player, and she ended up agreeing to go out with him. After their first date, she came home around 2 a.m, and she had a male roommate. His name was David, and he asked her how her date went, and she was like, oh my God, it was great. But then he noticed that the zipper of her jeans were torn. It was like torn off of the seam, and he was like, oh my God, what happened? And Nicole was like, he ripped my pants off, but I really like him. This was the first date.
Oh boy. I mean, I can see how that could go one of two ways. Like there could be a way to enjoy it, but given the context we know, I don't know about that.
And it's a lot to rip somebody's clothes on the first date. And she's 18. I mean, to me, it's a big age difference. Like she just turned 18, you know, like.
Yeah.
So young here. So, and this guy is a 6 foot tall running back, you know? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't like that.
Anyway, within the first couple of dates, OJ told Nicole that he didn't like her living with a male roommate. So he got her a place of her own. He paid for it and everything. And as a result, she becomes financially dependent on him pretty quickly. And she stopped working because she didn't really need to. This effectively meant that her life as an independent adult only lasted a couple of months.
Oh, no.
By July 1977, OJ went to Buffalo, New York to train with the Buffalo Bills, and then he went back to LA briefly for the birth of his daughter, Erin, whose mother he's still married to.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't say it, but I bet that's another reason she divorced him was because he's already dating another girl, you know?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think that's a pretty good reason.
I don't know why she didn't just say that. Why'd you guys split up? Have you met Nicole?
Yeah, well, she like defended him forever, so I don't know, some kind of loyalty.
For real. After OJ went back to Buffalo, Nicole flew out there with her sister Denise to watch him play in a football game. And Nicole and Denise sat with a friend of theirs and OJ's named Mike Mitello. When OJ ran out onto the field, he looked up at Nicole like he found her in the whole crowd and he winked at her. And he just made her feel like the most special thing ever. And Mike was even like, every time he scored a touchdown, Mike was even like, oh, he scored that for you. And Nicole's just beaming.
Yeah, who wouldn't be?
They both looked like they were absolutely in love with each other. But then at the end of the game, Nicole thanked Mike for the great evening and she gave him a kiss on the cheek. Right at that moment, OJ was trying to show his teammate who his girlfriend was, and he pointed up at her and saw Nicole kissing Mike on the cheek. So when they got home, OJ went ballistic and he screamed at her, "How could you embarrass me like that?" So later that evening, Nicole was telling Denise, "Why does he treat me like this?" But then they ended up going to a party that night and they had a great time. Nicole just wrote off the incident and they moved on like it never happened.
Yeah, it's so easy to write it off as he does this because he loves me so much.
And the thing is, OJ was a huge charmer.
Yeah.
He was charming. And we have to remember that about actors, that sometimes they're not just charismatic, but they're literally trained and they know how to captivate an audience, you know?
Mm-hmm. Without a doubt.
So I fully believe that that's what he did. He would love bomb her afterwards. And We'll have some examples of that. OJ began abusing Nicole pretty much right away. Eventually, it was found that Nicole had actually been keeping a safety deposit box where she kept diary entries and was like documenting evidence of the abuse. Those close to her believe that Nicole might have been documenting the abuse because she knew deep down that he might kill her one day. On Nicole's 19th birthday, so like not even a year after they get back together, OJ punched Nicole in the face and left her with a big black eye. And to apologize, he bought her a brand new Porsche with a giant bow on it. She said that she felt like an idiot driving around Beverly Hills in a Porsche with a black eye.
Yeah, and can you imagine being hit in the face at 19 by a football, like a professional football player?
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, that's terrifying.
That is terrifying. So when this happened, Nicole actually went to stay at her parents' house, and they actually didn't know that Nicole was dating O.J. Simpson until the Porsche showed up with like at their house with O.J. Simpson driving it. And here's what's funny. Apparently, Nicole's father was a little bit racist. According to Nicole's sister, Denise, she said, "I think my father's reaction was, well, I guess if it's going to be a black guy, I'm glad it's someone who's not a bum. I know he thought that because that's how he thinks."
Well, that's kind of gross.
This is really interesting to me about this case because it says a lot about how a lot of people viewed O.J. Simpson. One of the podcasts I listen to, it's called You're Wrong About, and they made a really good point about this. What they said was that people will put aside their negative prejudice of black people if that black person can suit their positive prejudice of rich people.
Yeah, that's so true. And we see that all the time without even really noticing it.
And this becomes so true with how the police treat O.J. Simpson better than they've ever treated a person of color in history.
For sure.
And another thing is, so by the time Nicole gets murdered, that was like 2 or 3 years after the Rodney King beatings, you know? So like it didn't make sense.
No.
We'll go more into the details of that later. So O.J. would lose his temper often, but those around him didn't really acknowledge that his behavior was abuse. They talked about it like he was just blowing off steam, and even Nicole's family made jokes about like how when they argued, O.J. would grab Nicole's family pictures and throw them down the stairs or out the window. And Nicole would always pick them back up and reframe them and put them back where they were, no matter how many times he smashed them. And her mom was just like, "Why do you keep replacing them?" And she's just like, I'm not gonna let him do that. Like, and she would always put it back, and her mom would start making jokes like, "Oh, is my picture out on the front lawn again?"
Well,
Some people also said that Nicole instigated disputes with OJ, saying things like that she knew how to push his buttons. Like I read some accounts from their mutual friends saying that OJ never said a bad word about Nicole, but Nicole was constantly talking badly about OJ. And when people say that she gave him a hard time, again, that probably means that she gave him shit about him cheating on her.
yeah, and when you've been abused since the beginning, yeah, you start to not like somebody. And of course, the abuser is not going to be putting on their real, true self in front of others.
Yeah, it's exactly that kind of thing, how like men can, express themselves any way they want, but as soon as a woman stands up for herself, she's emotional or hysterical. Aside from the fact that he was beating her, he also started cheating on Nicole pretty early on. One day during OJ season with the 49ers, Nicole showed up unexpectedly at her parents' house after fighting with him again about his infidelities. She drove 8 hours from San Francisco to Laguna, and when she got there, she told her mom that he was an asshole and she was never going back. And her mom, of course, figured that she was going to spend the night, but she took a phone call from OJ and suddenly she was like, "I've got to go back." And she was out the door, and she drove back another 8 hours.
No.
Well, it turned out that during the phone call, OJ actually said to her, "If you don't get back up here, I'm going to get another girlfriend and fuck the shit out of her."
Oh, gosh.
It's so sad.
It is sad. And probably if it had been different circumstances and a different boyfriend, she would have been like, "Peace out, Girl Scout." But it's just the cycle.
Yeah, and also at 18, how many serious relationships have you had, Like, how much do you really know?
Yeah, probably not a lot. Even if you have, it's,
Right.
yeah.
So they continued their relationship into 1979. One day, OJ was at practice while Nicole was hanging out with friends at home, and the phone rang. It was AC. AC is Al Cowlings, who was OJ's good friend. They were teammates in high school, college, and in the NFL. AC is also well known for having driven OJ in the famous police chase in the White Bronco. So AJ was calling up their home. I don't know what I said. So AC was calling them up at home, and OJ wasn't home. He was like out training. So Nicole picks up the phone, and AC tells him that he's in a hospital in Santa Monica and he has terrible news. And here's a trigger warning. This is about the baby. So OJ and Marguerite's 23-year-old daughter, Erin, had fallen into the family pool and was in a coma.
23 month, right?
3 months. She was just a month short of her second birthday.
Oh my gosh.
So apparently what happened was So they had three kids. Remember, Aaron was the youngest, and then Jason and Arnell were older. They were like 9 and 11 years old at this point. Those two were like out front, like washing their car, washing their parents' car. And Marguerite was actually paying the babysitter. And at that moment, I guess Aaron opened the side door and like went straight for the pool and went in. And apparently they got her out right away and everything, but the baby fell into a coma. According to a friend of Marguerite's, OJ showed up at the hospital and accused Marguerite of having been negligent and started shouting at her down the hospital halls, "You murdered my baby."
Oh my gosh. My son is 2 years old and he does the same thing, straight to the pool every single time if there's that. So I can totally see how that happens, and it's terrifying, and that's very sad.
Oh my God, that is my biggest nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
And again, they're still married at this point. They've been separated for about a year. Like, he's been dating Nicole for about a year at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Shortly after this incident, OJ and Marguerite finally officially signed a separation agreement. Marguerite was granted full custody of their two kids, Arnell and Jason, and she tried to get the Rockingham home and the divorce, but OJ would not give it up, even though it meant that his kids would be uprooted. Like, absolutely not. The three of you can find somewhere else to live.
Yeah, I'm sure his attitude was very, "This is all mine, mine, mine."
So the court ended up letting her stay in the house for a while, but eventually he was able to take possession of the home again. And he actually, like, showed up while she was living there and changed the locks. So, yeah, she was unable to, like, fight it any longer. She had to get out of the house. Like, legally, the court was like, I mean, it's OJ's. So OJ and Nicole ended up moving into the Rockingham home, and this house now became the place where friends and family came over for holidays and big events, and they had parties all the time. AC was known to always be around. He was like almost like an uncle or a godfather to the kids. He also became really close to Nicole, and he was even protective of her. Like, if AC was present when OJ and Nicole got into fights, he would always take Nicole's side and tell OJ to stop.
Interesting.
AC actually dated Denise, Nicole's sister, so it seems like maybe he kind of got close to their family during that time.
Yeah, for sure.
Over the years, OJ grew increasingly abusive. Nicole had documented in her diary that he once beat her with a wine bottle and broke her ribs.
Mm.
He would often apologize with lavish gifts like the Porsche. He also gave her a Ferrari once after a fight. After another fight, he apologized by proposing to her. Can you imagine?
No, I mean, honestly, the sad thing is, yes, I can imagine because we hear about it so often, but thank God I can't relate at all.
Yeah, truly. According to Kris Jenner, Nicole had really fallen by OJ by then. She had said, "The two of them were madly in love and had this obvious chemistry that you could feel whenever you were in the same room with them. They absolutely could not keep their hands off each other." He was already incredibly possessive of Nicole. Even when she would go to the bathroom, OJ would wonder out loud when she was going to come back. Like, he would say out loud to his friends, like, "When is she coming back?"
That's crazy.
I don't know how their friends weren't, like, how red flags weren't screaming at them.
I know, but I can kind of see how people could think that's endearing. Like, you know,
yeah.
When you're at a party, you know, everything's going on. When's my babe coming back? Like, oh.
Everything he did off of as like that's just his personality, as if he's just like an impulsive guy, you know?
Yeah, and hindsight is 2020.
Nicole and OJ married on February 2nd, 1985, in the backyard of the Rockingham estate. Nicole didn't really tell anybody about the abuse she was experiencing, but she did talk to her friends about him cheating on her, and she really thought that once they got married, he would stop cheating.
Mm.
By this point, Nicole was already pregnant with their first child. That would be their daughter, Sydney. During this pregnancy, OJ became really fixated on her weight. He expected her only to gain the weight of the baby and no more. And not just that, he believed that it should be no more than 7 pounds.
Oh, so, my goodness.
Small baby she was allowed to gain.
Yeah, never mind that the placenta weighs like, what, 5 pounds itself? Oh, my God.
Nicole became pregnant with their son, Justin, in 1988. And during these pregnancies, OJ was not only sleeping with random women, but he was also having a long-term affair with an actress and model named Tawny Catane. And this was pretty well known. At one point, Nicole actually found a bracelet that she thought was going to be a gift for her, and then she later saw Tawny Catane wearing it.
That's scandalous and heartbreaking.
I know. It must have broken her heart.
Yeah.
Nicole started refusing to have sex with OJ at one point because he never wore a condom with anybody and he refused to get tested. So she was legitimately worried about getting an STD. And I feel like that's fair.
Yeah, for sure. Ugh.
Around fall or winter of 1985, just a few months after their wedding, Nicole drove home from lunch and OJ began attacking her car with a baseball bat. Like, she parked her car and he just started beating it, and she had no idea what was happening. So she was terrified. She got out of her car and ran into the house and she called 911. The officer who showed up was named Mark Furman, and he's going to come up again later. OJ was able to convince Furman that this was just a marital spat, and he was really just taking a bat to his own car. He was like, that's my wife. This is my car. I should be able to destroy it. And the police were like, well, that's fair.
Yeah, sure, dude. Cool.
Every time the police are called to Nicole and OJ's home, OJ convinces them that it's just the husband and wife discussion, and they have it under control. Like, it doesn't seem like they ever asked Nicole what she wanted or needed.
Mm-hmm.
And they were also kind of starstruck. Like, for a lot of people, OJ was a sports hero, and all the police, like, try to be friendly with him. Like, they were kind of gushing over him.
Yeah.
It's so weird how, like, for men, being a sports hero, it's like this guy rushed 2,000 yards, and that's important, you know? Mm-hmm.
Thank goodness he did that.
A hero, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
And like I said, Mark Furman will come up again later in the story. He was pretty racist, and he would later be accused of framing O.J. Simpson out of anger about, like, a white woman being with a black man.
Hmm.
In 1988, Nicole and OJ went on vacation in Hawaii with a couple of friends. There were a couple of guys sitting at a nearby table who were seemingly homosexual. Like I said, OJ had a big problem with homosexual people. But Nicole was the type who was super friendly, and she started chatting them up. And she's holding her son, little baby Justin. At some point while they're chatting, one of the guys, being friendly, gave baby Justin a kiss on the forehead. And this made OJ livid. It led to a big argument, and he beat the shit out of her.
Oh, God.
In fact, I think I have a picture of her diary entry where she writes about this. I'll upload it on the website. Shortly after returning from Hawaii, Nicole and OJ went out on New Year's Eve with their friend Marcus Allen. Marcus Allen was a football player who was OJ's prodigy. Apparently, Marcus flirted with Nicole a lot, and she always shut it down, but her friends say that she told them that she actually really liked him.
Mm.
Either way, nothing ever happened. It's just like he flirted with her and she might have enjoyed it.
Yeah, she's probably terrified to even look his way too long.
Right. So they all went to dinner, and when they got home, they got into a big fight. OJ told his friends later that they had been drinking and Nicole was upset because she found the bracelet that was for Tawny Katane. But apparently they started fooling around, and when it came time for Nicole to give him oral sex, she said no, and OJ became upset. This is in OJ's words, by the way. They started arguing about her refusing to have sex, and what follows is what OJ calls a mutual wrestling situation.
Oh my gosh.
According to Nicole, he beat her and punched her in the head.
Yeah, this 20-year-old woman is willingly wrestling with them. Oh, wow, that is insane to even say.
And I think it's so funny that these are his words, that he's like, yeah, she wouldn't give me oral sex, so we fucking wrestled.
Yeah, whoever won had to do the oral sex. That's regular. We all do that.
Right. Like I said, this was on New Year's Eve, so about a quarter after 3 a.m., now New Year's, Nicole calls 911. All that can be heard on the call is a woman screaming and being hit. That's all you can hear.
Oh.
Around 3:30 a.m., two police officers showed up at their home. The housekeeper answered through like the intercom, and she told them that everything was fine and they were not needed. And the police were like, well, no, we need to speak to the person who called. And the housekeeper again is like, no, no, really, we don't need you. So the officer's like, listen, I'm not going to go. I really need to talk to the woman who made the call. As the officer is arguing with the housekeeper, Nicole comes running out of some bushes wearing only a bra and sweatpants, and she had mud down the side of her leg. She was clearly injured, like she was covered in cuts and bruises, and she had a handprint on her neck.
Oh my gosh.
She ran across the driveway to a post with a button to open the gate, and there at the post, she collapsed while pushing the button. She was yelling, "He's going to kill me. He's going to kill me." And as the gate opened, she ran into the officer's arms, repeating, "He's going to kill me. He's going to kill me." And the officer asked, "Who's going to kill me? Who's going to kill you?" And she said, "OJ." So the officer was like, "OJ Simpson, the football player?" Which must be so frustrating.
Yeah, seriously.
Like, oh, OJ Simpson? Where?
And I hope she fired their housekeeper.
I don't think it was up to her, you know?
Yeah, I guess she was probably scared too, but jeez.
So Nicole told the officer that her husband, OJ Simpson, had beat her up, hit her with open and closed fists, kicked her, and pulled her hair. He also yelled, "I'll kill you." Nicole told him, "You never do anything about him. You talk to him and then leave. I want him arrested. I want him out so I can get my kids." Around this time, OJ comes out saying, "I don't want that woman sleeping in my bed anymore. I got two women and I don't want that woman in my bed anymore."
Gross.
The police tell him that Nicole wants him arrested, and he tells them that he did not beat her up. He tells the police this. "The police have been here 8 times before, and now you're going to arrest me for this? This is a family matter. Why do you want to make a big deal out of this? We can handle it."
Wow.
I just want to cry for her, you know?
I know. And like, how? How have the police been there 8 times and they're still not arresting him?
I know. They're not doing anything. They can't even put a cop car outside.
Yeah.
So the police allowed him to go inside and get dressed, and he fled. By now, Nicole had filled out a report and she had her injuries photographed, which is way more than the police had ever done before. Nicole also had her sister Denise take photos of her injury so that they could show them to her father. And apparently her father believed that she could still make it work with OJ.
Of course he did.
And this brings up for me a lot of questions about her household and like if her parents allowed that kind of behavior, and like maybe that's why she is having such a hard time leaving. Not that it's easy, but
right. I'm sure at that time too, they were very, "Well, you got married, so you already did it. You're stuck."
Yeah. So Nicole started confiding in a guy named Ron Shipp. Ron Shipp was a friend of OJ's, and he was an LAPD officer who he actually gave classes about domestic violence. He gave trainings on this. Unfortunately, even though all of OJ's friends loved Nicole, they were all kind of under his spell. And I think they truly didn't think that OJ wanted to hurt her. Of course, they didn't think he was going to kill her. So anyway, she told Ron that she had photographs of the injuries and she was considering taking them and making them public. But she kind of still wanted things to work out and she was afraid of leaving OJ. And she also didn't want him to lose any of his endorsements. In fact, when all this happened, this got a lot of media attention, and she ended up calling the people at Hertz Rent-A-Car and told them that this really wasn't a big deal and she really wishes that they wouldn't take his endorsement away. And of course, they didn't want to. You know, they wanted to believe that he was all innocent in this.
Yeah, of course.
Since OJ had such a great relationship with the LAPD, he got away with only having to serve 120 hours of community service and paying a $479 fine.
They could have at least got a little more money out of him.
Yeah, at least we got some money out of him. But this community service he did was like public appearances.
Yeah, of course. That's what I'm saying. Like if it was nothing, at least get like $4,000 for the city. Come on.
I know. $479 is probably nothing for him.
Yeah, exactly.
He probably spends that on breakfast.
Yeah.
After this incident, Nicole started making real plans to leave OJ. He didn't take it very seriously, and he told people that this was just a phase. Like, she was going to come back around, and, like, she could go do her thing, but, like, she wasn't going to sleep with anybody. Like, that's not going to happen. Nicole had previously signed a prenup that took 7 to 9 months to iron out, and the couple ended up divorcing in 1992. Nicole received child support, but, again, OJ kept most of the assets. Nicole did get one little condo that she was able to sell later on. Again, he insisted on keeping the main house, even though that meant that her and the kids would have to leave.
Mm-hmm.
Initially, OJ was in total denial of their split. He would call Nicole 10 to 15 times a day and would even go as far as to sit in the bushes to stalk and see what she was doing.
That's insane. And these poor kids, too, are seeing their dad's behavior.
Yeah. Yeah. And on multiple 911 calls, Nicole is heard saying, like, "You have to stop screaming. The kids are asleep." or the kids are upstairs, and you have to wonder, like, if they had woken up at all.
I'm sure they did.
So Nicole is trying to move on, and she started spending more time with her friends, and she met a guy named Cato Kalin, who she would invite to come live in her guest house at a reduced rent in exchange for helping take care of the kids. It's also possible that having a male presence made her feel safer.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with fucking OJ out, literally hiding in the bushes.
Yeah. Ugh.
Cato was an actor, and he was about 35 at the start of the trial. He was also a comedy waiter, like he told jokes while he waited tables in restaurants.
That's cool.
That's like a thing that people do in LA, I guess, like a shtick that restaurants have.
That's really cool.
It is kind of funny. Like, everybody's trying to be an actor, you know? He kind of became a celebrity because of his relation to this case.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's dumb. He was like a really goofy guy, but he was really fit and handsome. He's just like the stereotypical like white blonde guy who's just like trying to be an actor. Like, I don't know. He's just this California dude, didn't know much. He was just kind of wrong place at the wrong time, ended up in the middle of OJ and Nicole's relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Nicole and OJ's kids loved Cato so much that they ended up naming their dog Cato.
Oh.
Cato said that this would get really confusing. They'd be like, Cato! And he'd be like, what?
Yeah, they could have thought that one out a little better.
I know. So when Nicole and the kids moved out, she decided to move into a house in Brentwood, which didn't have a separate guest house for Cato. So OJ told Cato that it wouldn't be appropriate for him to keep living in the same house as Nicole. So OJ offered to let Cato live with him at the Rockingham home for free. Super generous, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Nicole never talked to Cato again. Like, she tried to tell him, he's manipulating you. Like,
yeah, don't do it.
Totally saw this as Cato walking out on her.
Yeah.
I think it was probably really frustrating for Nicole to constantly see OJ charm his way through things.
I can't even imagine how frustrating that would have been. And like weasel his way into everybody's life that she had. That's crazy.
Yeah, this guy wasn't doing anything except making her feel safer, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Nicole had a hard time cutting off OJ altogether. She didn't want to hurt his feelings, and I'm sure she was kind of afraid of him escalating. She was able to distance herself and live on her own for about a year before she started telling her friends how she missed her home. And then she and OJ began to reconcile in the early spring of 1993. By now, OJ already had another girlfriend named Paula Barbieri, and there was actually a point in time where Nicole was the one calling OJ, and he was ignoring her.
Oh, no.
She even made copies of their wedding video and, like, sent it to him to try to remind him of their good times. In April 1993, Nicole showed up at his Rockingham home, and she told him that she wanted to get back together. So they reconciled, and they remained together on and off for the next year. It seemed like there was still some hesitance, but they weren't not together.
Yeah.
OJ kind of leaves his other girlfriend, Paula, hanging, but he would call her up whenever things got hard with Nicole.
It kind of would be hard, like, from Nicole's perspective, to have this guy who was, like, so obsessed that you were constantly calling the police and he was hiding in bushes, and then all of a sudden it quiets down and he has a new girlfriend and you don't have your big, beautiful house anymore.
And it's only quieted down because he's probably being impulsive and fucking creepy with Paula. Like, it seems like he has to make you his whole world and him your whole world, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
On October 25th, 1993, Nicole called 911 again. This is the call that you can hear on, like, all the documentaries about this case. Do you want to hear it?
Yeah.
911 emergency.
Can you get someone over here now to 325 Gretna Green? He's back. Please.
Well, okay, what does he look like?
He's O.J. Simpson. I think you know his record. Could you just send somebody over here?
Okay, what is he doing there?
He just drove up again.
He just drove up. Okay, wait a minute. What kind of car is he in?
He's in a white Bronco, but first of all, he broke the back door down to get in.
Okay, wait a minute. What's your name?
Nicole Simpson.
Okay, is he the sportscaster or whatever?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Wait a minute. We're sending the police. What is he doing? Is he threatening you?
I'm going nuts.
Okay. Has he threatened you in any way, or is he just harassing you?
You're going to hear him in a minute. He's about to come in again.
Okay, just stay on the line.
I don't want to stay on the line. He's going to beat the shit.
Wait a minute. Wait, just stay on the line so we can know what's going on until the police get there, okay? Okay, Nicole?
Uh-huh.
Just a moment. Does he have any weapons?
I don't know.
Okay.
He went home. Now he's back. My kids are upstairs sleeping, and I don't want anything to happen.
Okay. Has he hit you today or no?
No.
Okay. You don't need any paramedics or anything?
Uh-uh.
Okay. You just want him to leave.
My door. He broke the whole back door in.
She says the kids are up there sleeping, and I don't want anything to happen. OJ is actually in the background saying, he's kind of, it's almost like he's saying it to the 911 operator. He's in the background saying, why does it matter if the kids are asleep? If she once gave a blowjob to a guy named Keith while the kids were sleeping upstairs.
Oh, God.
He knows this happened because he was spying on her.
Oh, my God.
What does he say? Just stay on the line, okay? Is he upset with something that you did?
Oh, a long time ago, it always comes back.
And you can tell by the sound in her voice that she knows this 911 call is going to go nowhere. Like, you can tell that she's done this so many times, and it's never resulted with him going to jail.
It almost hurts the more they ask questions like, well, did he hit you? And she's like, no. But she knows he will.
Yeah, but he's going to, and he's going to kill me. That's why I'm calling you.
Yeah, and she's like, well, did he threaten you? And she's just like, he threatens me all the fucking time, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, it probably, like, literally, the more they ask her questions, she feels more and more defeated, like.
Yeah, and that's exactly how this call sounds.
Yeah, like, they're asking questions not to help her and find out information, but rather, like, shoot her down and make sure she's not overreacting, mm-hmm. You know?
Yep, exactly.
Oddly enough, Kato Kaelin, like, showed up during this altercation, like, during the 911 call. And at first, he tried to stay out of it, and, like, he just went to his guest house and was, like, about to go inside. But he decided to turn back at the last minute and make sure that Nicole was okay. And when he looked, he saw that OJ was still fully raging. Like, he was fully attacking Nicole. So he was screaming at her and just getting closer to her. And Kato was like, I can't just do nothing. So he kind of starts walking up to them. And as soon as OJ sees them approaching, he, like, tried to flip a switch and act like he was the victim. So Kato stayed until the police showed up, and he noticed that the police were pretty friendly with OJ. One of the officers at some point said to OJ, yeah, I'm married too. I know what you mean.
Gross.
Another officer asked Kato if he could fix the door that OJ broke down.
Wow. They probably, like, fight at the precinct or whatever about who gets to go out to the OJ call tonight.
I bet you're right.
Yeah.
And I bet they feel all giddy when they're like all buddy with him, you know, and they come back, they're like, hey, again. You know?
Hey, OJ, these damn women, huh? Gross.
In April 1994, OJ and Nicole went on vacation with some friends in Cabo. The couple was all mushy and all over each other, and Nicole told her friend, Faye Resnick, that she thinks this is it. She thinks that they're back together for good. The next night, OJ screwed it all up by openly flirting with another woman right in front of all of them. Nicole stayed silent, like, it was like she was blocking it out. The next day, the whole group of friends went snorkeling and they were hanging out, and OJ told everybody, all their friends, about how Nicole had this huge fear of frogs. Now, most of their friends knew that this was a phobia for Nicole, and it wasn't something to tease her about. But OJ was telling him about it like it was fucking hilarious. Like, he was talking about how ironic it was that his wife's biggest fear was frogs, and he was getting ready to star in a series called Frogmen. So then he looks at Nicole and he says, hey baby, I'm the Frogman. Now what do you think about that?
Gross.
Then as he walked away, she turned to her friend Faye and said, I don't think that's funny. He finds this to be funny. This is not funny at all. It's cruel. I'm afraid this man will kill me someday.
That just goes to show how, like, your gut just knows, too. Like, she knew from the freaking jump how her story was going to end.
I agree, because it's interesting. She wasn't only keeping a diary of the abuse. She was keeping it in a safe deposit box, you know?
Mm-hmm.
She was keeping it super safe. And she was also including, like, pictures in it and stuff. Like, pictures of the abuse.
Yeah.
Like, this woman believed there was a serious threat to her life.
Mm-hmm.
The next day, OJ flew to Puerto Rico for filming, and Nicole told Faye, "That's it. I can't do it. I can't be with OJ. Seriously, it's over. I feel that if we get back together, he'll end up killing me. I don't think he's changed." After returning from Cabo, Nicole seemed to be finished with OJ. On May 8th, she updated her will, and on May 14th, they had their daughter Sydney's first communion, which OJ didn't attend. Nicole was, like, really hurt by that. Like, that wasn't important enough for him to show up to.
Yeah, I would be too.
But then, on the week of Nicole's birthday, which was May 19th, she got pneumonia, and OJ decided to charm Nicole by stepping up as a parent and taking his kids to and from school. Which seems like a lot when you don't do shit.
Mm-hmm. Woo! Good job, OJ. We're all very proud.
Yeah, so, and then he, like, brought Nicole her favorite candy and stuff. And Nicole, like, let him, but then on May 22nd, after she started feeling better, she broke things off with him. And she even gave him back a bracelet that he had given her. And she told her friends that she told him she couldn't be bought. Now, OJ tries to reconcile things with his other girlfriend, Paula. In early June, Nicole told a few people that a key to her house was missing from her keychain, and she was worried that OJ had taken it. On June 5th, Nicole called up her friend, Jean McKenna. Jean was a realtor, and Nicole told her, basically, OJ threatened to report me to the IRS. What happened was she had a condo that was, like, the one that was left to her in the divorce, and she sold it, and she bought her own apartment in Brentwood with her own money. The problem was that she reported the Rockingham house as her primary residence, and it wasn't her primary residence anymore. So this would mean that if OJ turned her in, she would have to pay the IRS $90,000, which is all the money she has. So he would have just, like, bankrupt her and the kids, you know?
Yeah, of course.
On June 7th, Nicole called Sojourn House, which was a shelter for battered women in Los Angeles. She told them that her ex-husband had been stalking her and threatening to kill her. See, this is what it's like. Did OJ kill her? Well, there's a lot of fucking documented evidence of him getting really close to killing her, you know?
Exactly. Like, way more than any other case that I can think of.
And her trying so hard to leave, you know? Like, she's calling the shelter, even though, like, he's not living with her anymore, and she's still terrified of him, you know?
Yeah.
On June 10th, Nicole and Jean drove around the neighborhood that was near OJ's house to see if they could find any homes. I'm thinking this is her way of, like, selling her apartment and trying to fix this IRS situation.
Yeah.
So she tried to find homes near OJ because, like, you know, for the kids to be near their father. But she couldn't find anything, like, that was affordable for her. So they ended up going to look in Malibu, and she found something that was perfect. It was within her price range, and she liked it, and she could actually see herself moving on. On June 12th, Nicole and OJ's daughter had a dance recital. OJ got there late, and he didn't sit with the rest of the family. According to Faye Resnick, Nicole said to OJ, "Fuck off, get away from us, get out of my life. You're not welcome with this family anymore."
Reasonable.
And she had her whole family with her. I feel like maybe she's finally feeling stronger. She's got some support behind her and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Afterwards, OJ tried to get Nicole and the Browns, like her family, to pose for a family picture in the parking lot. And of course, that didn't work out. The Browns decided to go out to dinner, and OJ asked if he could join, but Nicole was like, "No, you can't." And I can't imagine that made him happy.
No, I'm sure it did not. Especially, like, he thought he had the Browns in a bag at this point.
Yeah, he probably doesn't understand when his charm doesn't work, you know?
Mm-hmm.
At dinner, there's a waiter named Ron Goldman, who Nicole kind of knows. She mostly know him because they have friends in common, but they don't really know each other. There's been a lot of speculation about whether Ron and Nicole were romantically involved, and I think that's because one of the biggest theories is that OJ killed her because she was sleeping with Ron, or at least because he thought she was sleeping with Ron.
Right.
From what I gather, I don't think Nicole and Ron were involved at all. Nicole's friend Faye says that Nicole had a crush on Ron, but it doesn't seem like anything ever actually happened to them. In fact, I've even heard some people speculate that Ron might be gay. Mm. Anyway, Nicole saw him at the restaurant and she said hi. When dinner was over, Nicole said goodbye to her family and she took the kids to get ice cream on the way home. And then she put them to bed. Around like 9:30 p.m., OJ actually went to McDonald's with Kato Kaelin. And it was like super random. Like they just like picked up their burgers and OJ ate his on the way home, but Kato didn't. And like that was like they just took a trip to McDonald's and go back. And some people wonder if this was OJ trying to build an alibi.
Interesting.
So this was at about 9:30 p.m. Like I said, once Nicole and the kids got home, she put the kids to bed and then she talked on the phone to her friend Faye. Then after that, she got a call from her mom and her mom told her that she left her glasses at the restaurant. So she asked Nicole if she could like go to the restaurant the next day and pick them up for her. But Nicole's house wasn't far from the restaurant. So she called up the restaurant and asked if she could talk to Ron Goldman. And she was like, hey, when you get off work, could you like swing by and bring me those glasses? And he was like, yeah, like I'm about to get off work. So around 10 p.m., Ron went home, changed his clothes, and then headed to Nicole's house with the glasses. Now, sometime between 10:15 and 10:30, Nicole's dog, Kato, started making a loud noise. Like, he was barking, but also, like, moaning or, like, wailing. Like, somebody said it sounded like a wail. Just a couple of hours later, at 12:10 a.m., Nicole and Ron's mutilated bodies were found in front of Nicole's townhouse. They were attacked outdoors in front of Nicole's house. Interestingly, nobody reported hearing any screaming. And remember, the two kids were actually upstairs sleeping this whole time while this was happening right in front of their house.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we have to wonder if they're just used to hearing this.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
It's believed that Nicole either heard a noise outside or she heard a knock at the door. So she came and opened the front door and that's when she was attacked by OJ, who immediately silenced her. Nicole was stabbed 27 times in the head and neck. She also had defensive wounds on her hands. I'm unclear if Ron attacked during the attack or if he was already at Nicole's house when OJ got there. Ron Goldman actually had a black belt in karate, but again, OJ was a 6-foot-tall Hall of Fame football player. So the struggle was supposedly epic, like absolutely brutal, but ultimately Ron was not able to overpower OJ. It's believed that OJ stabbed Ron in the neck and chest before returning to Nicole, grabbing her by the back of her hair and putting his foot in her back while pulling her hair and then slitting her throat from the left to the right.
Oh my gosh.
The wound was big enough to expose her larynx.
Mm-hmm.
Nicole's dog, Kato, was freaking out. We know that the neighbors heard him barking and wailing, and then some other neighbors found him wandering around in the streets. This is actually how, like, thanks to this dog, Nicole was found.
Yeah, which is so wild.
So, like, they found the dog wandering, and one neighbor planned to take him in and take care of him for the night, but Kato literally pulled the guy to Nicole's house, and that's when they, like, happened upon a river of blood, and once they looked a little further, they saw that there were dead bodies on the ground.
Hopefully somebody gave the doggo some treats.
I know.
Poor thing.
And just like the fact that the dog is like wailing, it like breaks my heart.
Mm-hmm.
It was an Akita, by the way.
I know. So sweet.
The police were called to Nicole's home and Officer Mark Furman shows up because he's familiar with the place.
Yeah, of course.
So then they go to OJ's house at like 4:30 in the morning to inform him that the mother of his children has been murdered, but OJ is not there. Instead, they find Kato Kaelin, who says that OJ is in Chicago. He also said that he heard loud bangs outside of his guest house around 10:40 p.m. The police reportedly walked around the area outside of the guest house, and that's where they found a glove covered in blood. They also found blood on OJ's white Bronco, and there was a trail of blood from the Bronco to the front door. Now, the gloves are important because there was the one glove that was found at OJ's house covered in blood, and there's another bloody glove at Nicole's house. But anyway, the police at this point didn't have a warrant yet to search the house, so they had to leave. They weren't able to get a warrant until like later that morning at like 10 a.m.
Okay.
And this is, 4:30 in the morning? So like I said, the night before, here's what we know of OJ. OJ went and got a burger with Cato at 9:30. And then at 11:45 p.m., he had a flight at LAX. That's the Los Angeles airport. He had a flight out to Chicago because he had a Hertz convention to go to. Apparently, his limo picked him up at 11:15. Who the fuck leaves at 11:15 when your flight is at 11:45?
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
And, okay, can you imagine rage-fueled OJ walking around an airport and riding a plane after just committing this murder? He just murdered two people, and then he goes to a Hertz convention. Can you imagine? Can you imagine seeing him all rage-fueled, dude?
Yeah, he had, because, like, there's no way that you could have hid the adrenaline that he had to have been feeling.
Oh, my God, I know.
Crazy.
So now the day after the murder, OJ's in Chicago, and he was notified of Nicole's murder, and he was like, you got to get on a plane back home. So gets on a plane back home. By then, the police had obtained a warrant to search his house, and they found more blood. So when he got home, the police immediately handcuffed him, but only for a moment. Because he was able to OJ his way out of it.
Of course.
And basically they agreed, like, we don't need handcuffs. OJ's going to meet us at the police station. So the police questioned OJ, but they pretty much let him take the lead. Like, they allowed him to ramble on without giving any concrete details. Like, for example, they asked him what time he did something. He'd be like, must have been around 7, 8:30, maybe 9:30.
Oh, my. Gotcha, great, cool, okay.
Or the police would ask, what were you doing? And he'd say, oh, just running around, you know, doing what I do. And not a single person is asking, what the hell does that mean?
Yeah, oh.
He just charges his way out of everything, and the police let him go home.
That's insane.
Enter Marcia Clark. Marcia Clark was the Los Angeles County prosecutor at the time, and she was just baffled at the way that the police were handling things. Like, she got word of all this at the time when they came to ask for the search warrant for his house. And she also was like, who? The sports guy? To this day, she is not over how the LAPD failed to question O.J. Simpson. I mean, they failed to establish a timeline because of that.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, OJ had a large cut on his left hand, and when the police asked about it, he was like, oh, I cut my hand in Chicago. But Marshall was like, well, then how the fuck did you get blood on your Bronco?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, then how?
Ron Shipp was his cop friend. He also heard OJ telling different people numerous versions of what happened to his hand. Like, he asked him what happened, and OJ was like, yeah, I cut my hand in Chicago. But then later, Ron heard him tell somebody else, oh, I cut my hand while chipping golf balls. And then later, he told somebody else, yeah, I was getting something out of the Bronco and I cut my hand. On June 16th, OJ attended Nicole's funeral with their kids, Justin and Sydney. He was clearly self-medicating with something, like maybe Xanax. For a while, it seemed like he was just kind of stumbling around, like, sedated.
It's probably a good way to be.
And, like, everyone at the funeral, everyone is looking at him, whispering, like, oh, my God, I can't believe he showed up. When Nicole's sister and her family were all notified of Nicole's death, and even Faye Resnick, all of them said it was OJ. He fucking killed her.
Yeah, he did. And, like, who else? It was OJ.
Who else? So, after all this, the media, of course, was going crazy, trying to, like, photograph OJ and figure out what's happening. In the meantime, OJ actually started wearing a disguise, like, as if he's not OJ Simpson.
Yeah, seriously. Okay.
I just picture him with, like, those, like, glasses with the big nose. So he's hiding out, and he decides to go stay with his friend Robert Kardashian, because nobody knew where Rob Kardashian lived. Rob Kardashian is an Armenian millionaire. He's a former attorney and a close friend of OJ's. He's also the father of Kourtney Kim and Khloe Kardashian. He was married to Kris Jenner at one point, and she and Nicole were besties, so the four of them were pretty close, and so were their kids. OJ and Rob Kardashian started putting together a team of lawyers that would become known as the Dream Team. This included Robert Shapiro, F. Lee Bailey, and Johnny Cochran. And Kardashian ended up renewing his license so that he could also help represent. OJ also asked Ron Shipp to be a part of the team, but Ron was like, no way. He actually said, I'm not on board. OJ killed her.
Mm-hmm.
The police decided that they were finally ready to arrest OJ, but Shapiro made a deal with them and agreed that he would take OJ to surrender himself to the police in order to avoid a media circus. That's privilege.
Yeah, for sure.
So OJ was expected to surrender himself at 11 a.m., but he had other plans. The entire world thinks that he's being arrested, and he bails. There was already a press conference scheduled and everything. Like, everybody literally thinks that he's about to be in jail. And Kardashian even said to him, like, hey, man, it's almost 11. We should really get going. And OJ was like, why should I hurry? What can they do to me? And Kardashian's like, well, I guess you're right.
Oh, no.
Now everybody's like, holy shit, he's making a run for it. Meanwhile, Kardashian reads this letter at a press conference that was written by OJ, and it may or may not be a suicide letter. Like, it doesn't exactly read as a suicide letter, but it sounds a hell of a lot like one. Or, like, it could just be a goodbye letter because he knows he's going to prison.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like it. I want to play a little clip of it in a little bit, but what he's saying is,
I had nothing to do with Nicole's murder. I loved her, always have, and always will. If we had a problem, it's because I love her. I loved her so much.
First of all, I want everybody to know that I didn't kill Nicole, but whatever happened, it was only because I loved her.
Yeah. Yeah. Why ever she's dead, it's definitely because I loved her, and it also definitely wasn't me.
I think of my life and feel I've done most of the right things. So why do I end up like this? I can't go on. No matter what the outcome, people will look and point.
According to Kardashian, OJ really was talking about killing himself and was actually like going from room to room and like trying to find the right place to do it. He ultimately decided to go to the church where he got married and kill himself there. And he was like, you know what? I'm going to have AC drive me there. So Kardashian tried to talk him out of it. And he even tried to like stall. He was like, hey, let's all take a selfie together. And OJ made up his mind. So at this point, Kardashian just kind of like accepted it. He put it in the hands of fate. And he decided that if a man wants to kill himself, he should be allowed to.
Yeah.
So OJ and AC left. And Kardashian fully believed that his friend was off to go kill himself. Hours after OJ was declared a fugitive, he was seen in the back of his white Bronco being driven by AC Cowling. OJ held a gun to his own head and told AC to drive or he was going to kill himself. The police were pursuing him, and this was like 20 police cars, but it wasn't exactly a chase like how people would refer to it still like 30 years later. It was like they were going like 35 miles per hour, so people said it looked more like a presidential motorcade, like all these police cars just kind of like slowly following him. It was like, it wasn't a chase, it was more like a moving negotiation, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
There were news crews and helicopters broadcasting everything. And there was actually a basketball game that was going on at the same time, and a lot of people were watching, like millions of people were watching this game because it was game 5 of the NBA Finals, and the Rockets were playing the Knicks. So literally, there ended up being like 95 million viewers who were just watching TV when it was like suddenly interrupted with news broadcasts of OJ Simpson. And the little game, they would put like a picture-in-picture, so it was still in the corner of the screen, but like nobody could actually follow the little tiny ball in the corner of the screen, you know?
Yeah, that's just a crazy thing to do. Like, at least let us choose if we want to watch it.
Right, and so a lot of people were pissed, you know, because they were like, this is fucking important, and it's like, would they have done this in any other police chase, you know?
Right.
Also, because so many people were glued to their television sets during this, Domino's Pizza had record-breaking sales that day. That's a weird fact, but isn't that funny?
Yeah, that is funny. Good for Domino's.
Yeah, good for them. And throughout the whole Bronco chase, fans were on the side of the road, on the side of the highway, cheering on OJ. Like, they were holding up signs saying, go, OJ, go, and things like that. And that's because this was, like, right after the LA riots and the Rodney King beatings, and people legitimately thought that police were just, like, framing OJ. You know, they were just looking for black heroes to take down.
Yeah.
And also, when you think about it, I mean, the police came to OJ's house 8 times, but he was only arrested, like, once. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people had their doubts about whether he was a bad guy at all or not, just like people still do.
Right.
So this pursuit would last about 45 minutes, and it was a span of like 60 miles that he drove. And it was just kind of like, I wouldn't say it's aimless driving. It's just that he had a bunch of places he wanted to go, and then the police got there before him. So he was like, fuck, we got to go somewhere else. First, they figured out that he wanted to go see his mom, who was back at his home at Rockingham. So they show up there before OJ, and he's like, fuck. So then OJ calls Nicole's father, who was at Nicole's house at Bundy, and he told him, like, hey, I'm going to stop by. So Nicole's father immediately called the police and was like, OJ's on his way over here. And they, you know, once OJ and AC got there, police were already there waiting. So then they headed to Nicole's grave. Again, too much heat. So around this time, Bob Shapiro held a press conference pleading for OJ to surrender. Like, he's trying to talk to OJ at this point for the sake of his children. But in all honesty, he's not even sure if OJ is alive right now. Like, him and Bob Kardashian and everybody else are back at Rockingham kind of mourning OJ, having accepted that he was going to kill himself.
Oh, yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, because he had just said goodbye to everybody. He was walking around with Kardashian, like, trying to figure out where to kill himself. And then he said his goodbyes, got in his car with a gun and AC, you know?
Yeah.
So Bob Shapiro spoke to OJ's kids, Arnell and Jason. They were the older kids from his first marriage. And he gave them this whole talk about how, like, your father loved you and he wanted you to have everything you needed and he wanted to make sure you had all the money you needed. And Shapiro basically told them, your father's going to kill himself because he doesn't want to turn himself into the police. So Jason ran away crying, and Arnell sat down and she just kind of sobbed silently. And then suddenly a relative who was nearby, because at this point the whole family's there. So a relative nearby turned on the TV and was like, wait a minute, he's right there. So like they see him in the Bronco, and Jason comes out and starts pleading, come on, dad, come on. At some point, the Bronco gets stopped in traffic, and AC turned to the side and saw two police officers pointing guns right at him. They ordered him to cut his engine, and he started screaming and swearing, shouting no, and he was like pounding on a steering wheel, like hard enough for the Bronco to start shaking. And mind you, throughout this pursuit, remember I said it looked like a presidential motorcade? The police didn't have any sirens on or any lights. And I don't know if maybe that's because OJ had a gun and like they were afraid of what he would do. But I mean, isn't that weird? If this were any other person and there's just a guy in a gun and there's 20 police cars after him, wouldn't they have shot at him?
Yeah, I feel like they at least would have like put the tracks down to like pop his tires. Like that would have been so easy.
Exactly.
To do.
Or like pulled him to the side of the road or something. Like it's not like he had a rifle or a machine gun. You know what I mean? It was like a little handgun.
Yeah.
I don't know what he thought was what they were afraid of. I think they honestly just didn't want to kill the football star.
Probably.
They didn't want to hurt him. They didn't want to hurt his good hand, you know? His running legs. Yeah, but it's so weird considering this was, at this point, it's only been 3 years since the beating of Rodney King, who, the whole thing started because he was speeding. You know, Rodney King was being pulled over for speeding and they beat him to death. So, like, why is this such, like, this is special treatment for OJ, you know? Like, and why?
It definitely is.
Like, because he can run really fast while holding a ball?
Yeah.
Like, that's
exactly.
Why, that makes him heroic?
That makes him not beatable to deathable.
Yeah, that makes him incapable of ever killing somebody, you know?
Yeah, mm-hmm, for sure. Not really, but, yeah.
And, like, speaking of being a black guy in the 90s, I bet AC was scared shitless to be running away from the police. And, like, he had no other choice. Like, his options were either defy the police and, like, cross his fingers, the consequences wouldn't be too bad, or have his best friend blow his brains out in the backseat. Like, his best friend is giving this ultimatum.
That really would be the worst situation to be in.
And like when you like picture him like beating on the steering wheel trying to tell the police to back off so his best friend doesn't kill himself, like that must be terrifying while the police are pointing guns at him.
Yeah. Ugh.
So AC is fucking terrified and he decides to call 911.
911, what are you reporting?
This is AC. I have OJ in the car.
Okay, where are you?
Please, I'm coming up the 5 freeway.
Okay.
Right now, we all okay, but you gotta tell the police to just back off. He's still alive, and he got a gun to his head.
Okay, hold on a minute.
He just wanna see his mother. Let me get him to the house.
Okay, hold on a moment. Okay, where are you? Is everything else okay?
Everything right now is okay, officer. Everything is okay. All of how he wants to get me to get it to his mom. He wants me to get it to his house.
Okay.
So that's all we ask. He got a gun to his head.
Okay, and what's your name?
My name is AC. You know who I am, goddammit.
Okay.
They're like, and who is this? It's like, are you not watching TV right now?
Yeah.
How are you a 911 operator and don't know this is happening when fucking 20 police officers are chasing after him right now?
I feel like on like every true crime, when you hear the 911 operator, they're like either so uninterested or like just, I feel like that's like a job requisite. They have to be just like oblivious to whatever.
So ultimately AC calls 911 and afterwards, like, he's talking to the police and he's like, just let us make it back to Rockingham. We'll stop driving and everything. Just let us make it home. And the police are like, okay, deal. Like, they're just gonna meet their demands, you know. They're gonna chase him around the city for 60 miles and be like, sure, we'll meet you at your house. After all this driving, at a snail's pace, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're so patient with him, you know?
How could they even do that? And, like, how are there so many people making bad decisions?
If anything, be like, no, meet us at the station, motherfucker, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, like, we're gonna follow you to the station.
He is running from the cops.
Yeah.
Oh my
God. Wow, that's insane.
So they make it back to Rockingham and AC pulls into OJ's neighborhood, but it was like packed with news vehicles. So they finally pulled into his driveway where there was a SWAT team waiting for him. Jason ran out to the car, super upset, and started yelling at AC, and a couple of officers pulled Jason back. AC said to the police, don't do anything stupid, he has a gun. So they gave OJ a phone to talk to an LAPD negotiator, and OJ basically demands, like, I need to talk to my mom. Suddenly the phone dies, so AC goes inside to get another, and when he came out, OJ was like, you know what, I give up. And he peacefully surrendered at 8:53 p.m. He collapsed into the officer's arms and said, I'm sorry, guys, I'm sorry I put you through this.
Oh my goodness.
I can't imagine that. He's a 6 foot tall football player collapsing into a police officer's arms like that.
Yeah, they were probably like, it's okay, OJ.
I bet he did this to Nicole.
Oh, for sure, without a doubt.
Oh, man, that is so sad to think about. To just, like, crumble into her arms like, I'm sorry, I didn't mean this.
Yeah, she was probably like, I can't believe I can break this man. He must really love me.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
So before they take him in, they let him go to the bathroom and have some orange juice, which is like... The thought of OJ.
Yeah, like, why is he always drinking orange juice?
Because he is the juice. It's fucking weird. Yeah. And yeah, they let him talk to his mother one last time before they arrest him. And when they asked him if he was ready to go, he said yes. And then they handcuffed him. But they made sure that all of the lights were off outside so that it would be too dark for any photographers or anybody to see him. Which, again, that's fucking privilege, isn't it?
Yeah, seriously.
I mean, the thought of having a perp block is pretty fucking weird in itself, but who else gets this kind of protection from a perp block, you know?
Yeah, literally, I can't think of anyone.
It's literally like they did him that favor of, like, don't worry, we'll make sure nobody sees you. Even though he's going to be on TV for the next fucking year in handcuffs, you know?
Cool, yeah. Well, they probably didn't think so. They were probably like, I don't know.
Well, yeah, because then... We'll fast forward and we'll see that when they interrogate him, they didn't actually want answers, you know? They let him go without any information. So it seems like, they were like, oh, nothing's going to happen to him anyway. So yeah, so nobody sees his perp walk. OJ was booked and he would remain incarcerated through the end of his trial, which would last 15 months. This was crazy.
That's insane. Yeah.
And this is where we're going to end part one. So in part two, we'll get started right from the beginning of the trial. And this trial is fucking bizarre. Like, legitimately was the trial of the century. This was the first trial where they allowed cameras in the courtroom.
Which I think had a big outcome on
it. It had a huge outcome, which was really bizarre when you think about the fact that they sequestered the jury and didn't allow them to watch TV or talk to anybody about it. But they're like, hey, everybody else in the world... Here's all the facts that the jury's not allowed to hear about.
Yeah, that is really crazy.
And this case made the front page of LA Times for 300 days. And, like, because of all of this, like, media on it, there were other deaths that were getting, like, overshadowed.
But at the same time, this is when tabloids became huge. Because celebrities were dying and media started seeing the money in them. Mm-hmm. Literally, they were like, oh, who else died? And they could sell some magazines. So like I said, this happened in 1994 and the trial wouldn't end until like mid-1995.
Wow.
And this happened, what, June 94? Kurt Cobain had actually just died in March of 94. And Selena Quintanilla would just die like a year later in early 1995. So like all of these were highly publicized cases, but you have to wonder if they might have overshadowed each other. Like the media was just getting their rocks off, you know? So it was kind of like, you have to wonder how much of this was manipulated. You know, how much of it did we...
For sure.
Did we hear what they wanted us to hear? You know, we focus mm-hmm. on what they wanted us to focus on.
Yeah, without a doubt.
And this case was a total circus. Like, okay, it's kind of like when I talked about, like, Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky, and they made fun of it on SNL. Like, okay, they made fun of this on SNL and everywhere else. Like, Jay Leno did a segment on The Tonight Show where... He had a bunch of like chorus dancers who looked like the judge. His name was Judge Lance Ito. And they did this like jazz number with a lady who looked like Marsha Clark. I'm going to upload this to the website too, because it's like, it's so funny. But they call them the Dancing Itos. And yeah, it's a bunch of Asian guys in like judge garb. It's the weirdest thing. But apparently Ito loved it and at some point invited Jay Leno back to his chambers, which like, is that allowed? Like that's...
Yeah.
That doesn't sound okay, you know?
No.
So yeah, every little, there's so many things in the trial that it's like, could this really have ever been a fair trial for a celebrity? Like, could there really ever be a jury of your own peers in this case?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, probably not.
And it gets so much more, like, there's all these conflicts of interest, like, we're gonna get into it. But like I said, the next episode will cover the evidence, how the police mishandled it, the tactics that the defense used to like confuse the jury, the way that Marsha Clark tried so fucking hard, but she just wasn't like cool or hip like Johnny Cochran, so nobody listened to her. They almost had to like declare a mistrial and start all over. Like this whole thing was a fucking mess. And at the end of the day, he basically got let off the hook. And there's so much to talk about. Like, he wrote books about this where he, like, responded to, like, letters and interviews. And then he got arrested again in 2007 for stealing back his memorabilia, which is, like, ultimately what got him in prison.
Yeah, which is so crazy to think about.
And literally when they arrested him, they were like, this is nothing to do with the death of Nicole Brown, which definitely means it was.
Yeah, it has everything like, we're to do gonna with. Get you. Guy.
They would have arrested him while like walking his dog if they could have, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so that's everything. We're gonna go more into the timeline and shit because it's gonna go into the testimony and all the witnesses and everything and why this case failed. Because I'll say it again. Spoiler, OJ's the killer.
For sure.
OJ Simpson is the killer. And I'll tell you why. I'll tell you how everybody and his mama fucking knows that he did it.
Yeah, perfect.
So yeah, and Haley's gonna help us break down some of the theories surrounding it too, and we're gonna kind of like dissect it and see where we can get the truth out of that, and what else is just kind of like what's the word? Speculation.
Yeah, perfect.
All right, so don't forget that you can go to brokenlimelight.com and it's literally like a follow along to the episode. There's pictures and videos and a transcript of this. I'll link all of the interviews that I can find that I've talked about in here. And yeah, I'm going to tag Haley on the posts about this. So Haley, tell us about your social media, where we can find you and what we can see on there.
Yeah, most of my social media handles are at Haley Up and Coming, and then I just go by my name on Facebook, Haley McConnell. I post a lot of stuff on there. I post a lot of stuff about confidence and just becoming the best version of yourself. So it's pretty fun over with me on my socials. Thank you.
For sure. Thank you so much for doing this with me. This was a lot of fun to talk to you about. So I'm really excited to get into part two and like break everything down with you.
Me too.
All right. Thank you, guys. Don't forget to follow us on social media. I'm Dee Dee West, and I'm under Broken Limelight. I'm on TikTok. And you can go to DeeDeeWestMusic.com for anything else about me. All right. Thank you, guys. Bye.
Bye.
Hey guys, it's Dee Dee West, and this is my new single, Just Like Heaven. It's available now on Apple Music, YouTube Music, and Spotify. Enjoy!
Well, show me, show me, show me how you do that trick. The one that makes me scream, he said. The one that makes me laugh, he said. Show me how you do it, and I promise you, I promise that I'll run away with you. I'll run away with you. Spinning on a dizzy edge, I kissed his face. And I kissed his head and dreamed of all the different ways I had to let him know. Why are you so far away? He said, why won't you ever know that I'm in love with you? Yeah, I'm in love with you. You, soft and lonely. You, lost and lonely. Twisting in the water, you're just like a dream. You're just like a dream. Well, daylight whipped me into shape. I must have been asleep for days and moving lips to breathe his name. I opened up my eyes and found myself.
Hey, future Unnaturalists, I'm Emily.
And I'm Andy.
And we are the hosts of Unnatural, a true crime podcast.
Each week, we'll dive into some of the most unnerving crimes that this unnatural world has to offer.
Listen for Unnatural on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And remember, make good choices.
And don't get got.
Bye.
Bark Box! You guys know my dogs, Jude and Eleanor Rigby. Well, we just started getting them Bark Box, and I'm telling you, your dogs will love you. No more are they angry at the mailman. No more, I say. It's like a box of dog joy that's delivered every month, and each box tells a different story with different themed toys, treats, and photo-worthy props. Typically, what we get in each box is a couple of toys, a couple of treats, and a chew, but you can actually tailor-fit your box to fit your dog's needs. Guys, I'm telling you, your dogs will love you, even more than they already do. So try it out, and if you use my link, you'll get a free extra month of BarkBox, which is a $35 value. So just head to BarkBox.com/BrokenLimelight and get started on your first BarkBox today.
BarkBox!
Nailed it, Jude.